They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WEBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Joining me on the Commons today is none other than Jeff Dove. Now, a lot of my national listeners probably don't know who he is, but everybody in Northern Virginia knows exactly who Jeff Dove is because Jeff Dove is running for Congress. And who better to talk to than Jeff? Jeff, thank you so much. I know you drove a long way to come here and join me in the studio. So thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, Sue.
Jeff, let's talk a little bit about you. You went to school, and when you graduated from high school, you went straight into the Army.
No, it was a little bit after, but yes, I joined the Army in 2004.
2004, yep. And when you got out of the Army, were you retired? Did you retire?
No, so I was actually medically discharged, honorably discharged for medical reasons. And after that, I decided to start working in IT. So that's what I've been doing for the past 9 years.
But you've always wanted to contribute somehow.
Yes.
And that's something that I read on your website. So, you know, vote for Jeff Dove. That's your website, right?
My website is www.doveforcongress.com.
That's right. That's the one.
You know, a little bit about me while I'm running. The itch for public service has always been a part of my life. It's why I joined the military, and it's part of why I decided to run for this office. And in particular, I went into the ballot box in 2016, and on one side I saw the presidential election, and on the other side I saw one person's name. And I said, wait a second, no congressional race should ever be unopposed. And so that's another thing that motivated me to get involved in this race.
So you're running against Jerry Conley.
Yes.
And Jerry has been my congressman and yours, I take it.
Yep.
For a number of years. I'll tell you a story about Jerry.
Okay.
I sent him an email asking him a question one day, and he didn't respond. Then I suddenly started getting emails from him begging for money.
Interesting.
And he was running. He was going to run again, and he wanted money. So I would hit delete, delete, delete. And then one day I got tired of it, so I sent him an email. I responded to that. I figured maybe he'll look at this email, if he won't look at the others. And I said, why do you want money, Jerry? Because you think you've done such a brilliant job already? You think you deserve yet another chance?
That's interesting that you had to go through that.
And he hit delete. So I was off his... So I was on his email list. Now, that was my congressman supposed to represent me, right? So you've got my vote, Jeff. Your mother taught you that when you don't like the way something is going, you should get off the sidelines and do something about it.
For years, we can all attest to seeing how Washington has become a pretty stale place as it relates to actually getting the job done. These Congress people go there and they forget who they actually represent. It's not the large corporations. It's not necessarily the special interests. It's the people of their district. And I think that I'm going to bring a focus back on the people of this district. And like I said on my website, it's on the front page of my website, my mother motivated me pretty much my entire life. Whenever I see something is wrong or I don't like the way something is, to get up and do something about it. And that's why, that's another part of why I'm running.
I love your mother. I've never met her. I hope to meet her sometime. But if that's what she taught you, then she's right.
She'll probably be up here for election night, so she may be here for the election night party. We'll see. She lives in Roanoke, Virginia, so.
I would love to meet your mother.
Thank you.
So, but that, I think, is brilliant. And if that's what motivated you to do what you're doing, mothers out there, are you listening?
I've been actually spreading that word to high school students, as well as I've been going out and speaking, is, you know, make sure that they get involved and don't just sit back and let people dictate to you what, how things should be. If you want to get involved, go out and do something.
I think one of the key issues, one of the key things that I think, legislators should do is listen to their constituents. Because what I've noticed over the years is the special interests come in with their bagfuls and boatloads of money and just throw it at them and say, especially in the HOA industry, they'll say, oh, we're here representing the homeowners and this is what the homeowners want. No, this is not what the homeowners want. This is what the industry wants, because the industry is going to make a lot of money off that. And so legislators said, but you wanted that. I asked them, I said, well, what on earth were you thinking when you passed this legislation? They said, well, you wanted it. Did you ask me?
So as far as listening to constituents, one of the things that I set out to do when I first announced for this office was I wanted to do town halls. And when I first brought it up, there were quite a few elected officials that said, oh, you don't want to do town halls.
Yeah, you do.
You'll have people yelling at you and cursing at you and that's holding okay. up signs. And I said, once again, when I served in the U.S. Army, it wasn't to go and fight for just Republicans or Democrats or independents. It was to fight for everyone. And so I'm going to listen to everyone because I will be representing everyone. And so by the time, actually now all of my town halls and candidate forums are done for the year. I've done 22 town halls and candidate forums this year.
Wow.
Show me a candidate around the country that has done that many on either side, in or independents or libertarians. I've gotten out and talked to as many people as I can this cycle, and hopefully that'll pan out, because there's a lot of people who are fed up with what's going on in Washington today.
Oh, a lot of people are absolutely fed up. You're right. I'm chief among them. I'm chief among them. So I hear you. I'm listening. On your website, you list a number of things that you are passionate about, that you want to change. And just about everything that you talk about is directly related to one of my passions, which is individual rights mm-hmm. and individual property rights. That's something that's been taken away from us, basically.
Yeah, we've seen that over the years, that you lose, I guess, more of yourself. In a sense, the government is coming and taking away more of what you should have ownership of, in a sense. So we've seen that quite a bit. You got the things like asset forfeiture or civil asset forfeiture, where yeah. they're coming in and taking stuff that yeah. basically can charge yeah. your vehicle with a crime and take stuff from them. So yeah. there's yeah. so many things that we need to address as a people to rein in the power of the government.
I like you, Jeff. You're speaking my language. Yes, tie them up in knots. You know, the biggest asset you have is your home.
Yep.
And I have long told legislators that the legislators and the industry have made an absolute mockery of hearth and home. And some of them actually agree with me. And they say, yes, you're right, Shu. We know that. We understand that. I think it's time that we, the homeowners, we, the citizens, we, the people, say that's enough. We don't want that anymore.
I believe so. And that kind of goes to, I think a lot of lawmakers have forgotten who their boss actually is. Their yeah. boss is the people, and they've forgotten that. They think that their boss is these special interest groups, and that's something that I think differentiates me from other candidates, because I'm talking about the people are my boss. When I saw my name on the sample ballot, you know, this is the first time I've ever run for any elected office. When I saw my name on the ballot, the only way I could describe it is that it's a humbling and surreal moment when you see your name on the ballot, because honestly, I realized it wasn't about me anymore. It's about every single person in the district. And that's something that I think has been forgotten by pretty much every elected official that's out there, because they've been so, you know, focused on the next news cycle or the next campaign.
Well, what I've heard and read is that they're told as soon as they get elected, their first job is to start working on their reelection. And so they're in the office very briefly, but most of the time they're off. And they're working on getting reelected. They haven't done anything to show for it, but they're getting ready.
Well, see, I don't see this as a career. I don't want to be a career politician. That's what my opponent is, and we see where that's gotten him. I just feel like I want to go there and make a difference, and then go back to regular life. I think that's very important to me. If I make a difference and people get behind me and they want me to continue doing that, then that's great. But I don't want to be just focused on campaigning the entire time. I think that's where you're not as effective as you could be.
We've got a situation now where the tail's wagging the dog, and that's exactly what you were talking about.
Yep.
And I really appreciate the fact that you want to listen and work with your constituents. And so I'm going to tell you some of the things that I would like to see happen.
Okay.
Or a lot of my listeners would like to see happen, because they've all been bitten by a lot of this stuff. First of all, we're talking about HOAs, and you talked about where the government has taken over a lot of what we have.
Yep.
You talk about civil forfeiture. We have HOAs all over the place because of municipal mandates.
Okay.
Did you know that?
Wasn't aware of that, no.
A lot of people are not. You have municipal mandates because it allows the local municipalities to double tax, or allows them to tax you and your property taxes that were supposed to allegedly go towards the maintenance, street lights, snow
yep.
removal, trash removal, all of that stuff. You got to pay for it again. Because
through the HOA.
Because they're not going to do it. So they've, in essence, put you under a fourth layer of government. This fourth layer of government has no checks and balances, has no adult supervision anywhere. Nobody checks to see what they're up to, what they're doing. It's got carte blanche to do anything they want. They come up with rules. They come up with regulations. They tell you they can do it. And state legislators, not the federal Congress, but state legislators, have given associations the power to fine homeowners. And it doesn't stop there. If they fine you and you don't pay those fines, they have been given the power to foreclose non-judicially. So they can take your house away because you have a butterfly garden in your house, and mm-hmm. they find you. And
yeah, that should not be the case.
It should not be the case. It absolutely should not be the case. So that's what your constituents are living under. And when they complain, they're told, well, you agreed to it. Nobody agrees to that. Would you agree to that?
No.
They say, but you can't talk. You have a story. You live in an HOA.
Yes, I do.
Tell us.
Real briefly, we've lived in this neighborhood since 2010. And when we moved in, we built a fence. And for the past 8 years, it's been our understanding and pretty much everybody in the neighborhood's understanding that you were not required to stain the fence. As long as it had the natural look, it was fine. Then I guess in May, they decided you had to have your fence stained. So all of a sudden, I see people all over the neighborhood, you know, staining their fences. But it was just kind of a shock that we just get an email that says, hey, you're in violation of this fence requirement that we had no idea had even been talked about, and you have 90 days to fix it. But that's just one thing out of, you know, many things that could come up. Like, just as an example, having to get them to approve a shed being in your backyard. You know, those are things that should not be the case. It's your property. You should be able to put something on your property. That's not changing the aesthetic of the building or changing the function of the building. It's just a shed. But yet you have to get permission. Put a doghouse, got to get permission. There's so many things that are, you know, it doesn't make any sense. If I wanted to put a basketball hoop in my driveway, I'd have to get permission from the HOA. That to me is ridiculous.
Oh, I agree with you. And the thing is, what they'll tell you is it's in the governing documents. It's in your declaration. And by buying that house, you automatically are deemed to have agreed to the conditions in your declaration. Thing is, quite often most people don't get their declaration until the settlement, which is not supposed to be.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't remember seeing that declaration during any of the process until maybe at the end when they handed us this HOA book.
Yeah, you need a horse and cart to take it home.
Yeah.
There's enough paperwork there to kill the whole forest.
Yeah, when you are literally signing your life away in a sense when you're signing for a home, which is, you know, a pretty daunting thing.
I tell everyone, go to the courthouse, get the document that's listed in the courthouse, because it's supposed to provide you with information. And if you're buying a house, you should be able to go in and find the restrictions before you even look at the house. You might decide, I don't want to live there.
You should be. I feel like there should be some mandate in place that they have to do that. Is there a piece of legislation that says that they have to provide that information?
It's a Mickey Mouse piece of legislation. Okay. The fact that that information is in the courthouse is it provides what's known as constructive notice.
Got
so
it.
You have the, I guess you have to do your due diligence and go find it. However, I don't know, about 30 years ago, Virginia and a lot of other states came up and said, all right, you've got to have a disclosure package. So anyone who comes into the neighborhood and decides they want to buy a house is entitled to a disclosure package. And they listed all of the things that this disclosure package was supposed to provide you with, including a copy of the declaration. Problem is, it's that thick pile of paper that you're handed and sign here and sign here and sign here. And most people are in love with the house. Most people are under pressure to move. Most people are, you know, buying curtains and getting the kids registered in schools. Nobody's going to sit there and read that. Nobody.
It's really hard to get a lawyer or someone in place that's knowledgeable to help you go through that piece of the process.
Even lawyers, A, don't understand it, or B, when they do, have been caught in that nonsense themselves.
Yeah.
I've talked to lawyers. In fact, I'm still talking to a lawyer, and he sat there and he read everything, every single word, and he put up a flag and a flagpole. He was in the military. He lost his entire group. He vowed that when he got home, he would fly a flag in their honor.
Mm-hmm.
So he bought the house. He read the governing documents, There was not one word about a flag or a flagpole or anything else. There was a lot of information about compost piles and rabbits and, you know, all kinds of nonsense.
Yep.
So he put up the flagpole, and he maintained his promise to his fallen fellow combatants, and the HOA told him he had to take it down. It was not allowed. And he said, there's nothing in the governing documents to prevent me from having this flagpole up. And they said, oh, yes, there is. You see, it says here that you may not alter the front of the house. He says, I'm not altering the front of the house. It's over in the side yard. You know, okay, you may not put a new balcony up there. You may not, you know, I can understand that being altering something, but a flagpole? It didn't. Went to court and he lost. It cost him tons of money to defend that.
Yeah, I can say in my neighborhood, I know anything that you try to attach to the house, like if you were trying to attach a flagpole to the, you know, outside of the house itself, they would have to, it would have to go through their approval process.
Oh yeah.
Just like I mentioned the basketball hoop earlier. And that to me, like I said, is ridiculous. If it's not going to cause damage or devalue the house, I don't see how that's actually affecting anybody else negatively.
My favorite story. I have to tell you my favorite story. Couple put up an Obama sign in their front yard. And I know you've got a sign story as well. And it exceeded by like a couple of square inches the size that was allowed in, by the governing documents. So the homeowners cut the sign in half. There was nothing controlling the number of signs. It was just the size of the sign. So they cut it in half and they had Obama. I love it. I love it. They went to court. And they went to court. And they went to court. In Virginia, there's a law that says if the prevailing party may be entitled to fees and costs. So the association sued them. I mean, there were a ton of lawsuits that came about, one right after the other. Well, we're not going to let you do that. So if you do that, then we're going to fine you. We're going to sue you for that. And every lawsuit, the homeowners won. And every time they won, they asked the judge for all of their fees and costs. And the judge awarded them every single penny they asked for, to the point where the HOA was bankrupt. And they just kept they just kept suing them.
Wow.
So what they did, they tried to dissolve the HOA, and that was too difficult. So what they did was they got together, and they went through the governing documents, went through with the whole neighborhood, and they stripped all of the power of the HOA. So the HOA has no power to fine, no power to... There are no covenants, there are no restrictions, there are no rules, there's nothing. The only thing they're allowed to do is collect enough money to maintain a one-acre lot. And my friends tell me that it's a real community now. They get together for Christmas parties, they get together at Halloween, they get together and they shovel the snow and they
work. And there's no tension.
There's no tension.
That there's that underlying tension of the HOA, I feel, in most neighborhoods that exists.
Right. You're right. You've got your finger right on the pulse. You have your finger right there. You understand that.
Yeah, I'll tell you the quick story about one of my supporters. They actually just sent me a picture last night of I actually took a woman, I want to say maybe in Herndon or Reston. Took her yard sign maybe 2 weeks ago, and she put that yard sign up and just got a letter from her HOA, I guess yesterday, saying that she needs to take the sign down and she has 10 days to take that political sign down. You're not allowed to have a sign up. And she already said it's not coming down until November 7th. So
away we go. Well, one of your passions and issues is constitutional rights.
Yes, it is.
And that is the First Amendment right.
Yep. it is a First Amendment right, and the HOA is trying to impede on her right to be able to say who she's supporting this year, which is ludicrous to me. And it's similar, you know, you mentioned earlier that someone had a sign up in their window of a condo.
Yeah, this was in Maryland years ago.
That should not be an issue either, because that's inside your house even. So they're basically saying they could come inside your house and change how you're doing things as well. So I think sometimes we've allowed HOAs to overreach. And like you said, without checking them as much as we should, because a lot of us are just trying to get on with our lives and kind of ignore. We're trying to get them off our backs, in a sense.
But the thing is, they'll even come after you because your blinds are not the right shade of white. It's got to be uniform. You know, it's off-white, and it should be a cream. It's a cream, and it should be a bright white.
You know? Yeah, I've gotten a list of colors as an example for stain. So I'm familiar. They gave us a list of colors.
Do they have that authority? I mean, is this in the covenants, or is this a rule that they've
That's
come
a
up
good
with?
Question. I took notes, and I will be going to check.
Well, let me tell you something else, because HOAs have been given the right to make rules pertaining to the common area, not private property. They don't have that authority.
Interesting.
They don't have that authority. They don't own your house. But they do oversee the common area. So if they say you can't spit on the common area, then I'm not going to argue with them. I mean, that's a losing. I'm just not going to argue with them. But when it's your private property and you haven't agreed to that, and nobody asks you, but just by buying, if it's in the covenant, then you're deemed to have agreed to it. So if it's not in your covenant, they don't have that right?
I don't think they should. That's, like I said, I feel like they are definitely overreaching in a lot of cases.
Well, now, you need to be able to just show them it's not your feelings or his feelings or anybody else's feelings. It's what they are allowed to do. You go to court, it's in the law, you know. They do not have that authority. And as you said a while ago, there are a lot of attorneys who do not understand this area of the law. I used to get calls from attorneys saying, I have a client, it's been a client for years who's now battling their HOA, want me to handle their case, and I don't know what to do. I don't understand it. So that's what homeowners are dealing with. Finding attorneys who don't understand, someone says, well, it makes sense. Really? Is it the law?
What do you think Congress's role could be in helping?
The problem is that a lot of these laws are state statutes. Mm-hmm. And the federal government is loath to interfere with state statutes. However, it doesn't mean that, and again, I'm not an attorney, but I just play one on the air. I gotta give that to the industry attorneys. They go, you're practicing law without a license. No, I'm not. I'm just pretending over here. You know, the federal government has come up with laws that says it is illegal to discriminate against blacks,
yep,
against Irish, against Jews, against women. So there are ways that I believe firmly that there are ways where you can still protect people and their rights. You can take away stuff. You cannot add to it. You cannot say to the HOAs, you've got to do this, you've got to do that. But you can say it is now illegal to do this, that, and the other. First Amendment rights, you have a right to make a fool of yourself.
Yep.
If you want to stand on your front porch and scream, that's okay. I can tell you stories, Jeff. I've been doing this for so long. I've read stories. There was a story out of Florida some years ago where a bunch of guys lived on the street. I don't know, townhouses, single-family homes. I don't know what it was. But they used to get together on somebody's porch and talk. First Amendment, right?
Yep.
HOA says, you're not allowed to congregate on people's porches. You're not allowed to meet over there. You're not allowed to do this, that, and the other. Stories about somebody in New Jersey, I think. They were not allowed to talk about politics in a co-op. And this is the politics of the co-op. Who's running for the co-op board or any of that stuff. They were not allowed to talk about it. What do you mean you're not allowed to talk about it? It affects you.
That'd be like if my HOA came in and told me that I couldn't have a cookout or, you know, barbecue at my house or talk about my campaign neighborhood.
That's true. And you that's know, that exactly. Would be... Yeah, they were not allowed to talk about it. They could meet. That was big of them. But they were not allowed to talk about politics. So there's so much that goes on out there. Nobody, you know, nobody understands and realizes just how bad it's gotten.
Maybe we need to do more of a focus on protecting First Amendment rights. Because there's a lot of different areas right now where First Amendment rights are being
trampled.
Not just in the physical world with HOAs as an example, but you have the social media platforms now.
Yeah.
As well,
yeah,
so it's in a digital space as well.
You do. You got thoughts about how you're going to handle that?
My thing about social media platforms is I'm really focused on the digital security aspect of it with regards to people's personal information. I'm more focused on that right now than necessarily what they do with their platform or how they allow people to use it. What I'm focused on is protecting American citizens. I think as an elected official, our first responsibility is the physical and now digital security of everyone. I want to make sure that they are doing everything they can to protect the data as it relates to allowing third parties to use data and how those third parties are then protecting the data. Because, I mean, just as an example, Facebook, you just heard what 50 million users lost their personal information. And then when the CEO of Facebook was talking, you know, in those hearings, he actually talked about developers having access to data that they probably shouldn't have had access to. That's a problem to me as well.
I agree.
So, yeah, I'm really focused on the digital security aspect of it first.
I think, yeah. I know that I've never put anything up on Facebook that I didn't want the world to know about it. I will post stories about the HOA stupidity, like the butterfly thing. And I haven't even done that a whole lot lately. But I've even backed away from Facebook. I just find it so reprehensible.
Well, I'll tell you, I didn't have any social media accounts until I decided to run for office. Because as a database person, I understand that every single thing you put out there, someone owns.
Yeah.
Someone else has access to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people will post all their pictures of the kids and all those things on the social media sites. But somebody else owns those pictures now, and who knows what the security is around those pictures. And they could easily be taken and used for the wrong purpose.
One of the funniest things that I thought was where Facebook was asking everybody to send in nude pictures of themselves. Your eyes are getting as big as saucers.
I had not heard. Whoa.
You have not heard that one?
No.
Yeah. Apparently they want to protect you, so please send us all your nude photos. Because if anybody decides to post them, then we're going to have this thing out there that's going to find it and prevent someone from posting that.
Yeah, no, thanks. That's wow. Yeah, I had not heard that.
Oh, my gosh, that's been around for a while.
Yeah, like I said, I wasn't really into using the social media platforms until I decided to run for office. And I try to limit what actually goes on there other than campaign related things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'll tell you, that's where the majority of the threats come in, as a candidate or an elected official. Most of the despicable things and comments and threats that you get are through the social media platforms.
But we're going to protect your First Amendment right to say and do all of those horrible things. Yeah, I've always said, you know, First Amendment rights are not meant to be pretty. It's not pretty speak. They go, but how can you allow someone to say something like that? You know, they're going to have to face their own. They're going to have to pay the piper for what they do.
Yep.
You've got to have personal responsibility.
And that's one of the biggest things you don't see with our elected officials now: accountability. They don't feel like they're accountable to the people they represent as well.
Nobody's accountable for anything.
Well, yeah, that's.
I mean, it's not just elected officials. Nobody's accountable for anything.
There's a lot of pushing off the blame onto someone else. And I think that needs to stop. We need to focus on the people who are actually responsible for committing whatever act we're talking about.
Absolutely. They've got to pay for what they're doing.
Yep.
They've got to pay for what they're doing. I mean, there must be a lot of room in the jails. We're not putting anyone there.
Well, with regards to jails, I think we're putting too many people that
shouldn't be there.
Shouldn't necessarily be there, that we could find other ways to deal with them. I think that's something that needs to be done as well. I'm for reforming sentencing and things of that nature.
I'm for sending people to some place to make them pay for what they're doing. Whether it's jail, whether it's community service, whether it's doing something, but they have to do something.
Yep. Yeah, I'm not saying people should get off scot-free for every crime, but I think we should have more constructive ways to handle people instead of just locking them up and throwing away the key.
I agree with you.
Well, we're a country of second chances, right? So
you can have a second chance.
We have to make sure that we give people opportunities, but don't necessarily just let them walk for committing a crime.
That's the whole point.
Yeah.
You know, they have to pay something, whether they're thrown in jail or not. I don't, you know, but they can't walk off. They can't get off scot-free.
Oh, yeah.
They just can't, and we're doing that. It's like, oh, well, the toilet training didn't go so well. They're 98 years old, and they're still worried about toilet training. You know, that's insane. That's absolutely insane. But we're failing someplace.
I'd say a lot of it is at home.
I agree.
That could be a starting point for a lot of these things. Real quick, I'll talk about something that's in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, is the economic opportunity zones that don't get talked about a lot. Senator Tim Scott from South Carolina actually put in that legislation that there'd be economic opportunity zones created for impoverished areas around the country to basically take capital gains money and invest it into those areas. Now, that's a concept that was created by Jack Kemp, but never realized until now. And what's interesting about it is it's looking at areas that have, you know, 20% or higher poverty rates, and then taking money to try and invest in those areas to get businesses to come in, to give people more opportunity, so they're not necessarily going to the streets for, you know, selling drugs or getting into gangs or things of that nature. What I would hope to do is not just take a macro level looking at cities, but actually going in a micro level and looking at more neighborhoods or localized communities and start trying to do things there. Like, okay, if we could take capital gains money or get a business to build a new YMCA or build a new place for kids to go to get them off of the streets and things like that. I think that that's something that is important to me as well.
How about using HOAs in that manner? Getting into the HOAs, because there are a lot of kids in there. You know, in my HOA, I ran for the board years ago because the kids in the neighborhood came and wanted me to run.
Okay.
And so I would open the door, my front door in the morning, and I'd have half the kids in the neighborhood sitting on my porch waiting for me. And everywhere I went, they walked with me, and they helped me, and they campaigned for me. And they did a whole lot of stuff. Thing was, there's no one at home to take care of them. They came home from school to an empty house. Quite often, a lot of them were locked out. The parents had forgotten to give them a key.
Okay.
So they were out on the streets. And then you get some bozo board member who starts cussing them out and being obnoxious to them, and it just escalated into stuff. Those kids need, and I'm talking young kids, too little for paying jobs, but those kids need someone. They need some attention.
Somewhere to go, yes.
Somewhere to go, someone to talk to, someone to tell their stories to, someone to work with. If we've got to put up with these god-awful HOAs, why don't we make them a positive experience? Why don't we turn it around? In one of the Scandinavian countries, what they did was they put the old folks' home, they built the old folks' home right next to the elementary schools. And they had a common open area. So in the morning, the older people would get up. They had somewhere to go. And they would get up and they'd get dressed and they'd go down to the common area where they'd have tables and chairs and they'd sit there. It was also part of the playground for the elementary school.
Okay.
Now, these kids need a hug once in a while. So they had adopted grandparents. Grandparents had adopted them. So during recess, they would go. They'd get their hugs. They'd tell their stories. They would hear stories. They would get encouragement. And they'd go back. And the old folks felt like they were not thrown out to the side. They were actually being useful.
I think we've forgotten the old saying, it takes a village to raise a child.
Well, it has some nasty connotations sometimes. it does. But the thing is, we're throwing people away. We're throwing young people away. We're throwing old people away. We've got these gulags that are also known as HOAs. Let's put them to work.
That's not a bad idea.
Let's put them to work. Let's make something out of it. Have young people with somewhere to go. They can help. They can do all kinds of things. They can feel good about themselves.
Yep.
That's the most important thing, is to feel good about themselves.
And that's very important. And I think, like I said, one of the things that I'm really focused on is giving people opportunities and making sure that they have the opportunity to feel good about themselves. I'll tell you, when I grew up, I was in a single parent home, and we were on, you know, we were living in affordable housing and growing up on welfare. And my mother worked multiple jobs, and seeing her work those multiple jobs and, you know, get off of government assistance actually motivated me. And it showed me that I had the opportunity to, if I worked hard, to get to a better place. And I am where I am today, thanks to her in large part. And so, you know, I think that we have to make sure that we're giving our young people, or showing them, that there is opportunity out there for them. And that's something that's very important to me.
So when you get to Congress, I'd like to work with you. When you get to Congress, let's look at ways of changing this. I think there's positive ways of doing it.
I think so as well. It's a good question what angle to approach it at, but I think it can be done.
You're going to have a lot of really good people there who are going to have all sorts of ideas. And if we look at what's not working, if we look at the sources of irritation and aggravation, turn them around.
Yeah, I think it's something that could possibly be done, definitely.
I'm excited.
Oh,
I might just vote for you, Jeff.
I'm very excited as well.
I might just vote for you. I think that's interesting. You had a whole list, and we're not going to get through all of it, but you had a whole list of things that you said were important, you were passionate about. One of them was personal liberty. We've sort of touched a little bit on that. What were you thinking? I mean, we've touched about it because we've talked about it from the standpoint of the HOA, but what did you have in mind?
I want to make sure that the government doesn't necessarily stymie individuals' rights in a sense. Like, let's look at the tax cuts. One of the things I love about it is people are getting more of their money back,
yeah,
and being able to do what they want with their money.
Absolutely.
Money is power, right, based on, you know, that old statement. but it actually lends people to be able to do what they want with their money and actually have the freedom to go do whatever they please. I agree with the president that we need to do more with regards to tax cuts.
I agree.
I think that will open up our economy even more. I'll say what's interesting is I want to say the month of July, there was a report done that talked about the retail report came out, or how much money was spent on retail, and the estimate was like $2 billion prior to July. It ended up being $5 billion. And when they looked at the numbers and they realized what sector was getting the most growth, it was restaurants.
People are going out for dinner.
Because they have more disposable income to spend. And now they're saying, oh, I could go out and take our family to dinner. But that's the freedom to not be concerned about, oh my gosh, living the paycheck to paycheck and just getting a little bit more to be able to put money away. And I think that's very important to people's personal liberty, being able to go out and do whatever they want to do.
How do you feel when you've been out to dinner? You feel good.
Oh, yeah. You feel good and full.
You don't feel like going out and punching someone.
No. No, you don't. Depending on how the service was at the restaurant.
Well, if you tip well, you get good service.
Yep.
But if you don't, you don't. But I think that's interesting. And what's neat about this area is that so many different kinds of cuisines.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's not all hamburger heaven.
That's one thing about this area. It's so diverse. We've got so many different cultures all mixed together. You don't see that everywhere around the country. Maybe New York, maybe San Francisco or LA, but here you've got people coming from all over the world, because the DC area is the most powerful area in the world.
That's
and
true.
People want to be here.
That's true.
And so, you know, we get all kinds of different cultures. It's great when you go down to, you know, Massachusetts Avenue and you see all the embassies, and then you go to Connecticut and you see all the different types of restaurants.
Yeah.
so yeah, this area is great for that.
What's neat is that you can also cook those things at home as well, because it's easy to get.
Yeah, there's
relatively easy to get
all kinds of grocery stores around here.
The different ingredients.
Yep. My wife is Filipina, so I'm aware it's very easy to find things that you need from other cultures.
One of my best friends is a Filipina, and she's the one who ran. I was her executive director for her campaign. She was pretty terrific. She was pretty terrific. Enjoyed that a lot.
So is my wife. She's very terrific.
I can't wait to meet her. But you've got a new baby, right?
Yes, she's 16 months old. And I could tell you, I've been running for this office her entire life now. So she's, I try to make as much time as I can for her. As much as I can.
I bet you when she grows older, she's going to be so proud of her daddy when she
understands
what he's doing.
It's funny, whenever she sees any of my signs or things like that, oh, it's daddy. You know, that's always funny.
That's cute. So a little girl.
Yes.
Awesome.
Her name is Serenity.
So. Oh, I like that.
Yeah. After the Serenity Prayer. And then her middle name is Jubilee, for the year of Jubilee as well.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Lord, give me the
I don't have it memorized. But yes.
Something to do what I, you know, change what I can, accept what I can't. And
yep.
So, yeah, my mind's going. That's what happens when you get to be a little old lady.
I don't know about that.
One thing. You joined the Army, and when you got out, you went to school and you made the dean's list.
Yes.
So you worked really, really hard.
If I wouldn't have joined if I wouldn't have gone through the military, it would have been really hard to have the discipline to work full time and go to school full time.
So you had you held down a job as you went to school.
Yes. I was actually working at the time USGS, U.S. Geological Survey, when I first started going back to school. And yeah, it's tough. It's tough working full time and trying to learn basically an entirely new field, in a sense, learning IT.
Mm-hmm.
But then I got my first job in IT while I was still going to school. So that helped me out a lot, because I was getting the hands-on experience during the day and taking those classes at night. So it was able to translate pretty well.
Yeah, my husband did that, so I know exactly how hard that was. No days off. No, the only day off ever was Thanksgiving Day. We lived in Arizona.
Yeah.
And that day we had a picnic, and we went up in the mountains to cut our Christmas tree. And it was usually a dead bush by the time we got home.
I mean, me personally, it's weird. I haven't taken many vacations during my adult life. I haven't taken a vacation in the past 4 years, actually. So we've been, you know, grinding away.
We've been grinding away. Well, I know that you're working really hard on this, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah, it's a lot that people don't realize how tough it is to run for a congressional district.
I told you I was executive director. I did not have a single day off. I worked from morning till late at night, 7 days a week for I don't know how long, almost a year.
Minimum, I go to bed every day at 1 a.m. and wake up at about 5.
Yeah.
Take my daughter to daycare. So I'm very, very busy, say the least. And it's getting even more busy the closer we get to Election Day.
I really appreciate the fact that you've taken off this much time to spend with me.
No problem.
And my listeners, we talked about constitutional. You also had traditional values listed. We've just got a couple more minutes.
Okay.
So I want to touch on that very briefly, but I also want to give you a chance to tell us what you want. Actually, take the last whatever. Tell us what you want us to know.
So one of the biggest things is I hope that I'll be able to take my experience in life, whether it's the military, my job experience, my life experience, take that to Congress with me. One of the biggest things about military experience is it allows you to work with people who have different ideologies, backgrounds, to just accomplish a mission, regardless of what those people's backgrounds is. And the mission in the military is pretty much stay alive or, you know, not let anyone get hurt. And I was just recently endorsed by With Honor, which is an organization that is a nonpartisan organization that basically focuses in on getting veterans elected to Congress. They've endorsed Democrats and Republicans alike. One of the things that they asked us to pledge was that we would meet with someone from the other side once a month. To me, that's crazy that it's come to that.
Yeah.
And right now, if you look at the numbers in Congress, there are less veterans than have ever been in Congress. And you see how hyperpartisan it is.
It is.
Because those people come in with a hyperpartisan attitude, and then they're staying, and they're in and they're legislating that way. And one of the things that I've loved about doing all these town halls and candidate forums over this past year is that, yes, we see the differences between both sides, but we also see the things we have in common, which we don't get to see because the majority of the time you got both fringes yelling at each other. And that's something that I've been very excited to see. With regards to my platform, one of the biggest things that I'd be pushing for is adding more security around the Social Security number. I've been proposing adding multiple forms of authentication around the social. So every single time you present it, you'd have to provide a secondary form of authentication. That to me is something that we should have been doing for a very long time. That number was never intended to be our identification number, but now that it is, it should be more secure.
It used to be on your checks. It used to be on everything, you know, and then all of a sudden it's, oh, wait a minute.
Now you have to have one, and that denotes you. It pretty much denotes you as a citizen if you have a Social Security number. So that's the thing that needs to be protected the most, I feel, and it's not right now. Think about this. There are video games that are more secure than our Social Security numbers are.
That says a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, so that should not be the case. And I've actually been pushing this since February 2017 because I wanted to, as a candidate back then, I wanted to make sure that people saw that I was coming with outside-the-box ideas that a lot of people weren't talking about. And so I know it's not necessarily the most sexy issue out there, but that's something that I'm very passionate about. And I've been talking about it for over a year, and a lot of people agree, regardless of the party, a lot of people have been the victim of identity theft as it relates to their social, and I think we can eliminate a lot of that by doing something like this.
Jeff, would you promise me something?
Yes, ma'am.
When you are elected and you are my congressman, would you come back?
Of course.
Of course. I love it. Thank you so much for joining us.
No problem. Today. Thank you so much for having me.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.